weirdly interested in. You sell vending machines?
Yeah, I have a few. I don't sell them. I just own a few. I have two of myself.
That's incredible. So how did you get into that?
That was just, you know, there's a guy who played at Auburn named Josh Dollard.
My God.
He's from the Charlotte area. We used to train with this trainer named Gabe Blair. And he,
let's go.
Phenomenal guys. I was just talking to him, you know, things at Winthrop, and we were just talking about what are ways to make money outside of basketball so you're not, like, one-dimensional as a person. And that was one of the things he showed me, and I took after it.
I mean, I love that. That's awesome. So you have two active right now, and you just
– Yeah, and I've showed a few how to do it as well, and they take it a little more serious than I do now.
What's in your vending machines, though? That's very important, because, like, I hope it's not.
I'm gonna be honest, I can't eat what's in my vending machine.
Okay, all right, that's a good thing.
Welcome to the Fine Time Podcast. I'm your host, Gabe Blair. And again, this is our special March Madness edition. So we'll keep on with episode 2 of the March Madness edition. But today, before we get started, I want to introduce a special guest, a longtime friend, AAU Selector, Director, North Carolina AAU, camp guy, and just a guy that's been in the basketball world a long time. He's going to join us today and kind of give his insight and take on a lot of stuff in March Madness. So welcome, Devin Seifert, to the podcast, everybody.
Yes. Yes. Thank you. Mr. Blair, that's what we're going to call you.
Okay.
Coach Blair, Trainer G, just an honor to be on the pod. First guest?
Well, this is the first guest on the special edition March Madness. So
okay. Well, technically, I'll take that. I'm honored.
Yeah. But you're technically the first guest. Yes, you are. So, and we will have you on the original podcast here soon to talk about all the stuff that we do basketball wise and the stuff that you do. But right now, because it's March Madness, I want to just get right into talking basketball, talking hoops, and talking about the first round of the NCAA tournament. The first two rounds, the round of 64 and the round of 32, has already passed. We had some really good matchups, some really good game. So first thing, I want to talk about the allure of the tournament. Everybody talking about a Cinderella story this, a Cinderella story that. And this may be the first tournament in over 20, 30 years that I want to say 12 or 13 of the higher seeds advance to the Sweet 16.
That's surprising. You know, a lot of people were saying, you know, there was going to be a lot of upsets like there was, you know, last few years. You know, people picking underdogs on brackets, of course, and their gambling sites. And hey, if you were somebody that just picked the favorites, you did pretty well. So
yeah,
definitely a surprise.
So about the higher seeds, I did notice that the first round, the number one teams, number one seeds dominated. At which, I mean, typically it's not often that you get a 16-1 upset like we did last year with Purdue. So that wasn't very surprising. But to see the number two seeds pretty much take care of business and the number three seeds probably do the same and the four seeds, I want to show a quick graphic showing just showing the balance of the higher seeds are really dominating the tournament. So I'm going to share my screen really fast and could kind of pull up this graphic. Let me see which one we got here. Oh, here we go. All right, share this. So if you look right now, we got a March Madness seeds bracket right here. And if you look at that 16 line, all those guys pretty much got knocked out pretty quick. And you look at that one line, all those guys are fighting and look pretty good. That two line, all the guys are still there in that two line. You check out that three line, you got Creighton and Illinois still in contention. Four line, you got Alabama and Duke still fighting. And the only team who is a double-digit seed still remaining is the darlings of the tournament. And you can't really call them a Cinderella, but you, I mean, you can because they're the last a double digit seed remaining, and that's NC State. So that's pretty interesting for this tournament right here.
That's extremely interesting, and what a run it's been for NC State. I know we're going to talk more about them, and, you know, we're North Carolina guys, but
right.
Watching them has been something special.
And then if you want to go and talk about conferences, the ACC turns out to be the best conference this year in college basketball based on the standings right now with four teams still remaining. You got North Carolina. You got NC State, you got Clemson, and where they at? They're number six seed, and you got Duke as the number four seed. So a lot of that ACC down talk, I mean, you can't really say that now, that they're the one conference with four teams remaining. So I thought that was a pretty big deal there. Moving on, because we knew number one seeds were pretty dominant, but to see them dominate and see them do what we thought they would do is pretty cool. So everybody who thought it was going to be an upset tournament, there are some upsets, but not as many as people thought. So moving on a little bit, I would say the one team that – can you see me there? Okay, I'm back. Yeah, I would say the one team that's out of the tournament that I thought was probably like probably the 17 seed or the team that's like – really, really good that still could be there. I thought Oregon Ducks like really showed me how special they could have been if they were healthy all season. I know their big man, I forget his name. It kind of slips my tongue right now. But the big kid who I want to say he was injured a little bit, to me, he's an NBA prospect. He's a kid who can play – drop coverage in the NBA and really help a team. He a kid that has a super high efficiency. I want to say the first two games of the tournament, or maybe even his conference tournament, I want to say he only missed like one or two shots and scored about 20 points a game, only missing like one shot. And then, I mean, he rebounds hard and does a lot of really good stuff. And then the other kid from that team who probably put himself on the draft board is Cousinard. The Cousinard kid dropped 40. I want to say he dropped 40 in the first game, dropped about 32 in the second game. He did a really, really good job for a team, and he definitely put his name on a lot of draft boards because I think he's a very talented kid. And funny story about Cousinard. So back when I played at Wichita State, right, in 2011, it was my senior year. But right before I got there in 2008, there was a player there who was like one of the best players, modern players ever to play at Wichita State, PJ Cousinard. And when I was watching the kid, he kind of looked like PJ in the face a little bit. He kind of got a similar game to where he's just a guard that can make tough shots and it doesn't get sped up and just got that really elite game. And come to find out, PJ Cousinard is somehow related to the Cousinard at Oregon, which I thought is pretty cool because it shows that like sometimes skill is just in a person's DNA.
No question. That's too cool. I didn't know that. Well, you see that a lot. Guys that are related, brothers, all the brothers in the NBA. You know, you're right. Sometimes just in the DNA. So the chances of somebody having the last name of another guy, and you're like, I wonder if he's related to that guy. If they're both hoopers, there's a good chance they're related, you know.
And on top of that, PJ Cousinard, he's from Texas, and he runs an AAU organization called Cous Elite. And when I tell you, he's done a phenomenal job building that program grassroots-wise, putting them in some of the best tournaments. And I want to say like just recently they won a national championship in whatever division they was in. I got to look that up a little bit more. Maybe one day I'll get them on a podcast, but he's a really good role model for the kids. He got a really good family and it's just good to see that his legacy carry on, even if it's through a different Cousinard name. So that was something that was pretty cool. And moving on. Another big story from the first couple rounds of the tournament was Oakland. Oakland had a heck of a run. They ended up losing in overtime to NC State in the round of 32. But the biggest takeaway I think everybody was rooting for was Jack Gokey. Is this his name? Yeah. Jack Gokey hits 10 threes in the first game. I'm talking about just letting them go. Did you watch that game?
I did. And you want to talk about a bracket buster, Mr. Jack. Mr. Jack, the biggest bracket buster of the year. But that's just amazing. The guy is a pure shooter. And you probably have the stat in front of you. The guy only took 8 field goals.
Before the tournament started, yeah. He was like 355 total field goals, and 347 of those were from the three-point line.
just amazing. Just amazing. It's extremely hard to believe that. Like, you know, you got fast breaks. He's probably – I want to watch his season highlights because he's probably turning down layups to sprint to the 3-point line on a 2-and-1 fast break type of guy, you know, to only shoot right. 8 2-point field goals, and he's their, you know, their best player pretty much. So, wow, what a run!
No, actually, he comes off the bench. He's probably their most impactful player, but they got another kid who was the player of the year. And I think his name is Townsend or something like that. This kid right here, like, they actually had a really good team. Like, when you really look at the makeup of their team, they had a really good inside-outside guy with Townsend. They had the kid, Gokey, who came off the bench, actually. And they had another they had a solid PG. They were actually a really good team. And they, even though they were kind of like a Cinderella story, the way that team was made up and the type of basketball they played, that was elite basketball. And they definitely earned their stripes in this tournament. And if you think about some of the shots this kid was hitting, you're a shooter. Right. You understand how tough it is to just be consistent facing a basket, making shots. He's coming off a pin down screens left and right. He's coming off an elevator screen, like running through the screen and facing up. I mean, all the different angles that this kid is able to shoot, that's elite. And the funny thing is, last 3 or 4 years, he played at a D2. Didn't get recruited. He was a zero-star recruit. And then I think he even mentioned that he did DoorDash and stuff when he was a freshman in order to make some money. So a DoorDasher got Kentucky out of the tournament. That's crazy.
Hey, well, that's what March Madness is all about, and it almost sucks for some of the other guys on this team that you mentioned who are, you know, technically better overall players than him, probably more complete, but, you know, Jimmy Jacker, he stole the show.
Jacker, I like that.
Yeah, man, good gracious.
Yeah, so, moving on to the team that beat Oakland and sent them home, is NC State. NC State continues their magical run, getting 5 straight games in the ACC tournament, putting them in the tournament. And now that they got in the tournament, they got 2 wins and they're heading to the Sweet 16.
Man, well, the madness for NC State started in the ACC tournament, as you know. And that bank shot.
Oh, yeah.
Put it into overtime. Against, I believe it was Virginia in the semis.
Right.
They had no business coming back and winning that game. But that kept their run alive. Ended up winning. And look at them now. They're too deep. And it really worked out perfect for them. They had to get past the first round, but then the Oakland upset. I mean, a much more beatable team than Kentucky would have been. And just to ask Oakland to do that back-to-back games, now they still played a heck of a game and almost got NC State. But everything just kind of fell into place for State and just their resilience.
What about the big boy from State? Very own Winthrop native. Rock Hill native, DJ Burns. Yep. a kid I'm very familiar with, a kid I've trained before. One of the best kids, I mean, like, take out basketball and just personality-wise and just person-wise, he's one of the best, humblest, wholesome kids to be around. And to watch his dominance over, I mean, you got to start with Louisville, in which he didn't even have a great game that game. I think that was the only game that he was in single digits. And then you got beating what? Who was the second team they beat? Syracuse, dominant. Mm-hmm. And then you got Duke, solid. And then you got Virginia, another solid performance. And then you got Carolina, another NBA prospect in Baycott. And then you go and fight Texas Tech and get a double, and get 20 points, almost 10 plus rebounds. And then you got Oakland, and you give them a double-double. I mean, the way this kid's been playing, I'm super happy for him. I'm super proud of him. But one thing I know is that, like, that's who he is. He's a big-time player, a big-time talent, and it's crazy to see that. Well, matter of fact, it's great and it's wholesome to see that the world is finally seeing how special he is.
Well, he's proven that on every chance he's gotten. He's proven it. And it's like, man, can you keep doing that? And he's a fan favorite. Like, you saw that one game, or just about every game now, when he catches the ball in the post and he gets like an ISO situation, the crowd just starts going nuts. They just want to see him go to work. I mean, big man's making spin moves, getting to the cup, making amazing finishes. I mean, he's a big body, but he can move, and he's dominant. And funny, you know, this might be a good time. I know you've been setting up for the podcast the last hour or so, but I was scrolling through my TikTok, and speaking of DJ Burns, there's a podcast that I listen to a lot, and I follow him on social media, called Pardon My Take. It's the number one sports podcast in the world by Barstool Sports.
Okay, we must be number two then. I thought we were number one.
Well, I think they inched in front of us, but and I really want you, if I send you this link, is there a way you can pull that up? Because I want to see your live reaction of they had DJ Burns on the podcast. They had DJ Burns and they had Jack and Jack, but I didn't see any clips about Jack from Oakland. I'm sending this to you right now here.
Okay, send it to me and I'll pull it up and screen share.
Just a little snippet about DJ Burns talking about how he owns some vending machines and how he got started with that. And
then let me see if I can find it.
Just take a look at it.
Okay, I got it. All right, let's check it out. Screen share. Bear with me as I find it. Okay, I got you right here. Let's see what we got here. Oh, it says DJ Burns owned vending machines.
Yes.
All right.
Actually, weirdly interested in you sell vending machines?
Yeah, I have a few. I don't sell them, I just own a few. I have two of myself.
That's incredible. So how did you get into that?
That was just, you know, there's a guy who played at Auburn named Josh Dollard.
My God.
He's from the Charlotte area. We used to train with this trainer named Gabe Blair. And he,
let's go.
Phenomenal guys. I was just talking to him, you know, things at Winthrop, and we were just talking about what are ways to make money outside of basketball so you're not like one dimensional as a person. And that was one of the things he showed me, and I took after it.
I mean, I love that. That's awesome. So you have two active right now, and you just
I've showed a few how to do it as well, and they take it a little more serious than I do now.
What's in your vending machines though? That's very important, because like, I hope it's not.
I'm gonna be honest. I can't eat what's in my vending machine.
Okay, all right, that's a good thing. Yeah. Your own supply.
Yeah, but it sells well for sure.
Oh man, that's tough right there, yo.
There you go, man.
That's tough.
He made sure he mentioned you, because I know you and Dollard. I mean, you guys used to work out all the time, and he made sure he mentioned you, man. You know, you definitely had a big impact on so many guys, and he wasn't gonna get through that story without bringing your name into it. I think that's the number one podcast in the world, sports podcast. I think Rogan probably, you know.
Yeah.
So your name just got shouted out there to millions of people. So
that's so nice. I got name drop. That's what's up. I appreciate it. Yeah, no, sure. I think it's pretty cool. But I think it's pretty cool because I mean, DJ, we have talks all the time, especially back when he was a little bit closer to home and I was in North Carolina. But like, he's one of those guys who he gonna put his people on. If you rock with him, he's going to make sure that he show you love. He's going to make sure that, like, he's never going to fall into the hype of when you look on social media right now. You can look on Twitter. His name is trending on Twitter. You look on Instagram. It's posted about him on Bleacher Report and this and that. He's the type of person that no matter how much hype he get, no matter how much people talk about him and find him now, he's always going to remain that same humble person who is going to ride with the people that roll with him. And I think that's a testament to not only him as a person, but I know his mom and dad, his family, and he's got a great family. Just a kid who you want to see succeed, and that his parents done it the right way. They was hard on him, but they held him accountable. And now you can see it shown in everything he do. So that's awesome right there. I see him shout me out and shout Josh Dollard out. And Josh Dollard, he's a business genius. He's one of my guys, played at Auburn, just like DJ said, but he's a guy who I may want to have on a podcast because he's doing a lot of great things in the Charlotte area, helping people just find financial freedom. So I big up him for that, and I think I know he do really great stuff, and I'm going to definitely link in with him a little more. All right, moving on from DJ Burns in the NC State. And what about some things that happened in the tournament? I'm going to call them bad juju moments, situations that if they were went differently, I think the team could have won, or maybe they just laid the egg. Maybe. All right. So the first moment I think is a bad juju moment is Kansas was playing Samford. Samford is a very well coached team. It got two really good big boys inside, can shoot the three really well. Just overall a good team. They played Kansas. They gave Kansas all they could handle. I'm talking about fought them tooth and nail. Come down to the last part of the game, 18 seconds left. They're down by one. Kansas get a fast break. And matter of fact, let me just pull up this clip.
Man.
Look at this shot, though. Look at this block.
Incredible block that just got taken away from Samford.
They call this a foul.
Do you agree with us?
I do.
They call that
you
a
guys.
Foul.
It's a great block by Samford right there. A really great job with.
Oh man, that's a.
Are we sure this segment shouldn't be called bad officiating? Because I've seen a lot of that.
That was a situation where, well, definitely it was a bad officiating. I mean, they made a bang bang call, but I wish they could review that because that late in the game, that would be easy. Watch the monitor. He didn't touch him. He only touched the ball. And let's go ahead and get him the ball. No foul. Play on. And I think if they don't call that foul, Samford wins that game and advances to the next round of the tournament. I don't know if they would have won the round after that, but I think they definitely got cheated out of their opportunity with 18 seconds left to have the ball and be down by one against Kansas. So, but I did see the press conference with the coach after the game. And when I tell you, he was a very class act, said the right things, didn't blame on the officials, took accountability for having other chances. And that's what you like to see is like coaches who, I mean, they could be frustrated and they could have their opinion about what happened, but they're examples for their players and they're examples for the young kids watching them in the way he dealt with that situation. I thought it was A1, and I commend him for that.
Absolutely. Well, if you're a college basketball coach, you're used to getting screwed over on calls because referee, you know, refs are human. They're going to miss calls, but just on the highest stage like that, just to see it taken away. And you're right. Like, you don't know what could have happened after that. But And for everybody in the nation to see that you got screwed over on a call, that's just tough. But it happens. It's part of the game.
Yeah.
These college coaches are it's nothing new to them. Having a call or two that could have gone the other way, that could have changed the outcome of the game. You know, it's different. And in the NBA, you know, they're reviewing that. They're changing the car, right?
But I know replaying and kind of going back and challenging, looking at plays in that situation, I can understand, like, hey, this was a bad call. But it's like, if you allow that to happen all the time, then I think it will kind of have a effect on the momentum of the game and effect on the flow of the game. But my suggestion is, in that situation, why don't we give coaches like a challenge to where they got one challenge a game, where they could just say, can we go back, challenge that play? But to where it's not something that you got to do every single time. It's a bang, bang call. But if you give a little bit of a challenge flag, so when coaches get in that situation, yo, let me challenge that play and see what go on. Maybe the NCAA will look into that. But I will say, I've coached high school, AAU. I've been around college coaches. I've been around pro coaches. Officiating on every level, pretty bad. Like, just so it's clear, it's not really just bad in college. It's just bad, and I don't. And that's part of what makes the game interesting, is that you don't know what these guys that wearing the striped suits are going to call.
Well, nobody's saying it's an easy job, and until you know, you're an actual official and you're sitting here trying to make these calls and stuff. You know, if you're not right up close to that play, you see the way the guy fell. Like you said, it happens so much quicker for them. And it's easy for us to slow it down and say, what in the world? Clearly, like, that was all ball. And, you know, the thing about the challenge, they have that in the NBA, of course. And I watch a lot of NBA, and it definitely does mess up the flow of the game. And, you know, they do some reviews in college, too, that messes up the flow. And I think anytime there's any type of review in college or NBA, it takes way too long. First of all, there should be somebody up in the booth that has the ref shouldn't have to go over there, put headphones on. They should have another official somewhere that's watching the replay in real time, slow-mo. They tell you, nope, this is what it was.
Yeah.
Over with. But, it is annoying in the NBA. You know, you got everybody after every time somebody fouls, it's they're doing this.
Oh yeah,
they're doing this.
I'm like, okay, that's the dude.
First of all, first of all, you've only got two challenges, so you can't review 50 times throughout the game.
Right.
So I don't know. Maybe the NCAA is trying to stay away from getting to that point. But and then if you do it, you know, the other part, you know, it's got to be across the board. It can't just be – if they make a rule to cater to, you know, the NCAA tournament or the Power Fives, it's got to be a rule in the NCAA Division I across the board.
Right.
So whatever change they make, it's got to be for the low majors. And I don't know if it has to be for D2 as well. But it's a lot.
We'll have to bring some referees on one day and get to talking about all of that. That'll be like a 24-hour podcast-a-thon talking about how to improve refereeing and whatnot. But so that was the first two rounds of the tournament. And now we can move on because we got our Sweet 16 is set. And I must say, based on my predictions, I got about, 10 of the 16 teams right. So –
okay.
Better than average, but it's just tough for anybody to really get them predictions right. So in this situation, looking at the Sweet 16, I want to kind of go back and really talk about the matchups now. And then I want to talk about, like, who I think will win the matchups. And I mean, you can give your advice on who you think should win, or you could agree with what I'm saying, because I'm 10 for 16 right now. So we'll see.
There you go.
But we'll go by region, and we'll go kind of quick on this one. We'll go by regions because I think it's kind of good to kind of stay organized talking about these games, because it's kind of like if you ever played an AAU, the NCAA tournament is kind of like a pool play into the championship round, and it's like four pools. You got your East pool, your West pool, your South pool, your Midwest pool, and it's a winner from every pool that goes to the Final Four. So in this pool right here, the East pool, these are the teams you got left. You got UConn versus San Diego State. And the big headline with this game right here is that this was the championship from last year. This is pretty much a rematch of the championship from last year. Teams are a little bit different now. I really think that UConn kind of like they leveled up a little bit more than last year even and got some good pieces in the portal. Got another year under their belt. Coach is being coached, staying on them. I think they got a little bit more of an edge than San Diego State. What are the odds? I'm not a big bettor. I don't do a lot of betting, but I know you do a little bit of FanDuel. So what are the odds? Well, first, let me tell you my prediction, and then you tell me the odds.
Okay.
So my thought is UConn is going to outmatch San Diego State in this game. I think it's probably going to be – I'd give it probably an 8-point game, at least an 8-point game. I don't really see it going to overtime. I don't see it being super, super close. I'd give them about 8 points on this game.
You're pretty close. It's a 10.5-point spread. UConn is favored by 10.5 points right now. That game's not till Thursday. That line could change. It could go down to 8, could go up a little bit. Depends on what the public does or which side they're betting on, and the line could move. But, yeah, you're pretty close. You know, that's what Vegas is saying, that UConn's about 10.5 points better. So you're pretty close there. I do dabble in FanDuel. It just became legal in North Carolina. And so they're giving away money.
Really?
I just go through my promo money, and it's been fun. They strategically probably made it legal right before March Madness, trying to get everybody down here hooked. So.
Well, I will say I've never made a FanDuel or online gambling bet on sports, and not because I don't like making money. I've never really been big into gambling, so I never kind of got there. I feel like I may have an addictive personality. That's where if I start gambling, I don't know the outcome for me, and I just want to stay away from that.
Well, so my advice to you is don't start. don't start. Yeah.
So next matchup in the East region, we got Illinois versus Iowa State. Illinois versus Iowa State. My key takeaways on this one, I think these are two really good teams. I've seen both of them play. They both got a good brand of basketball, but one of them has a guy who has been averaging over 30 points in this past 6 game, and I think he's going to be the difference maker. For Illinois, kid Shannon Jr., guard. I'm talking about he gets it. He knows how to pick his spots. He get downhill, can make the three. I think last game he may have had 30. In the past 4 or 5 games, the past 6 games, he's averaging over 30. And I just think in a tournament, you need that guard that's going to carry you in them droughts. And I think for them, he's going to do it. And I think I give them the edge over Iowa State, even though they're a 3 seed. So
that's
score. I'll give you a quick score. I'll give you a quick score prediction before you tell me the odds. I would say this will probably be a closer game. I give it about a 5-point game for Illinois.
Okay. Well, you're first of all, Terrence Shannon, his line is 21.5. So
we might well bump that up to about 29.
Hey, you heard it here first. You heard it here. Take the over.
And
as far as the spread, 2 versus 3 seed, they have Illinois actually as a 1.5-point dog. So if you were to pick Illinois on the money line, you got some good odds there. So they actually have Iowa State favored by 1.5 points. So it's tight. And like I said, that could always move. That could always move. But you were right on. Right on the money with it. Going to be a close game, more than likely. So,
okay. So, given I think that UConn and Illinois is going to win, I give the edge to UConn making it out of that region and getting to the Final Four. So next region, we got the West region. The West region has North Carolina versus Alabama as the headline matchup in the Sweet 16. North Carolina, I think, is a more balanced team. They got a player of the year at the guard spot. They got a, I feel like a 10-year senior in Bacot at the center spot. And they got guys kind of stepping up all around. And I just think they're the more balanced team, the more disciplined team. I see North Carolina kind of winning that game. I think it'll be a battle, but I did see Alabama play defense last game. So I know they're capable. But at the same time, I just think the way North Carolina plays transition and the way they'll get a good shot either by going into Bacot or kicking it out. And what's the kid that was the player of the year? It was the kid that was the player of the year in ACC, their guard, who's just like lighting it up. I forget his name.
I don't know who got player of the year.
Yeah, I forget his name, but I mean, he's pretty much like a walking bucket. He can make step back threes when they need big shots. He can get to the cup. I mean, he's pretty much a guard who's undersized, but he's got a big heart and a deep bag of tricks. So I give it to North Carolina in that one.
You're talking about RJ Davis?
RJ Davis. Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay, he got player of the year. Okay, yeah, no, he's a bucket.
I thought he got player of the year in ACC, if I'm not mistaken.
He may have.
So I got North Carolina winning that game by about, again, probably about 8 points. I think Alabama going to try to keep up with them, but I think they're going to pull away. As a matter of fact, I'll go even higher and say that's a 10-point game for them. That's a 10-point game for North Carolina.
Well, they got Carolina favored by 3.5 right now.
Oh, 3.5. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I'd say I'm kind of with you, though. Just being a Carolina fan and watching how they've been playing, man, they just got it rolling. That starting unit is just very complete with Ingram, and then you got Bacot, RJ Davis, you got Ryan Comrat, what's his name? Ryan, the shooter, the white shooter.
Yeah.
They can stretch it out. I'm with you, even though Alabama's really tough. Maybe I'm biased. I'm kind of a Heels fan, so I'll roll with you on that.
Next matchup in the West, we got Clemson versus Arizona. I think Clemson has been playing great. I think they've definitely turned it on since the tournament has started. But I do remember Clemson in the regular season. I know they can turn it off. I think Arizona has a little too much firepower. A little too much experience for this moment, and I just think Arizona takes Clemson. It's probably going to be closer than people think, mainly because, like, when a team gets rolling, especially in the tournament, they don't want to go home. So I think that they'll do everything they can to make sure this game is winnable at the end, but I think Arizona takes it. So I'll probably say Arizona by 3 in that game.
Yeah, I'm with you. They have Arizona favored by 7.5, but I think that's a little high. I'm with you on that. PJ Hall for Clemson is tough. Their other big guy is also really tough. I mean, they got a good squad. You never know what could happen. You got on the other side, you got Caleb Love, who's hooping. They're a complete team. It's going to be a good matchup, I think. I do think 7.5, you know, putting Clemson a 7.5 underdog is a little bit disrespectful, but we'll see. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah. All right. Well, I got North Carolina and Arizona being the two coming out of this region in Elite Eight, and I see North Carolina beating Arizona to get to the Final Four. And this is going to be a good matchup because, you know, Arizona had a kid who played in North Carolina last year who transferred. So it's going to be a good guard battle. And he's playing well this year. they're playing very well as a team. But I just think, again, that North Carolina is a little bit more balanced and a little bit more experienced, and they'll get the edge in that game. So that's the West region. I got Carolina coming out of there. So now we got the South region, where you got Houston and Duke as the headlines. And I'm not going to lie, it's something about Houston I've been liking this whole season. And watching the way they play and how physical they are and the type of – in the way that that Sampson got them boys playing, I just see Houston being a little bit too much for Duke, a little bit too physical, a little bit too like just rough around the edges for Duke. And I see them down in Duke. But I think Duke going to put up a good fight. I think they got some really good players in Flipowski and I want to say the Williams kid, the guard, who's been – real, real solid. And I see Houston knocking out Duke in that Sweet 16.
I'm going to have to agree. I'm still going to have to agree with you. I'm trying to find something to disagree with you on, but I watched that Houston game last night. Those guys are tough as nails. They have Duke as a 4.5-point underdog. So they're giving Duke 4.5 points on that game. So Houston's favored by 4.5 right now. Did you see that dunk that Shed, I think you pronounce it Shed, but it's spelled like S-H-E-A-D, that putback dunk that he has?
That off the rebound? Yes.
Yeah.
And that's a 6'1 guard?
Yeah.
Shed is a 6'1 guard.
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing. Like, he's so bouncy, so tough. Had some huge buckets down towards the end, and their best players fouled out. They barely, they barely snuck by. But what's the other guy that had like 30?
I forget his name, but I definitely remember him. He had a really phenomenal game that game. And something else people don't realize is that although that game was close, that was an in-state rival game. That wasn't like just a tournament game. That was a Texas versus Texas game. So anytime it's a kind of like a rival game, you can throw the lines out the window. I mean, it's typically going to be a battle, regardless of the rankings of those two teams.
Yeah, and the guy's name is Sharp. The guy Sharp is the one who went off. But LJ Cryer is actually probably their leading scorer. He's tough. I mean, they're just so tough. And then, you know, Duke, it just, you know, can you count on Jared McCain to go for 25 again? Probably not, you know. But, and then he
went for 30.
Well, I'm just saying, can you depend on him to go for 20 in this game against that Houston defense? Probably not. So then you gotta depend on Roach. Filipowski has not been scoring the ball very well in this tournament. It's gonna be tough for Duke. It's gonna be tough for Duke against this Houston team, man. So I'm with you on that.
So I got Houston by, I go 8. Houston by 8.
Okay, you're giving them, yeah, all right. You're giving them the easy nod there.
Yeah, so next matchup in the South region is NC State versus Marquette. So maybe I'm a little biased here.
Because of their best player did just shout you out on the number one.
Maybe I'm biased here, but I feel like what NC State has done over the past 7 games, I don't think Marquette is going to be able to put a halt to their momentum. I think Marquette has a lot of good attributes about them. And they can do a lot of special things on defense. I like the way they pressure the ball. I even like a couple of their guys on offense. But I just feel like NC State plays defense. They've been playing in your face, I'm in your grill defense. And DJ Burns touched the ball and good stuff going to happen. So I don't know how they're going to figure out how to win. But I feel like they have the momentum and the intangibles to win that game. So I'm sure everybody else is picking Marquette, but I got to go with NC State and probably like by five, and I see Burns getting another beefy double-double.
A beefy double-double. That's the correct term.
A beefy double-double, yes.
Whenever I thought you said beefy, I said, that works, man. He's a beefy man. Marquette is favored in this game by 6.5, but it's a 2 versus 11. That's probably why. If you're just watching how NC State's been playing,
they beat Duke. They beat Duke last week. Duke's still in the tournament. They beat Virginia, and Virginia got ousted in the beginning. They beat Carolina, and Carolina's still in the tournament. Like they're not the NC State of a month ago. They're the NC State of 2 weeks ago.
Yes, and that's what the NCAA tournament is all about. It's who's playing the best basketball right now. So they come in as an 11 seed, and they're not playing like an 11 seed. And having them as a 6.5 point underdog, I can't even say they're an underdog. Game to me is a toss up. I mean, DJ Horn is a machine. DJ Burns, we all know what he can do. It's gonna come down to coaching, and Keats has been coaching his tail off lately. And what are they gonna do when Burns catches the ball? You're gonna double? You're gonna let him work? It's gonna be a fun game to watch.
So with that being said, in that South region, we got NC State versus Houston for a trip to the Final Four. And I'm going to continue to be on my naive optimism here. And I'm going to say NC State finds a way to beat Houston to go to the Final Four. They got this far. And sometimes – because I remember all the stories about the last time NC State won the conference tournament and Dickie V Jim Valvano was their coach.
Jimmy V.
I feel like it gives me vibes of Jimmy V right now, and I can't bet against him right now. I gotta let them cook. So that's who I got getting out of that region. And last region we got right here, we got the Midwest region. First game we got in this region is going to be Purdue versus Gonzaga, a one versus a five. I think that Purdue, after their episode last year and not being able to seal the deal against a lower seed, I think they've come back focused. They're ready to win. They're ready to win. I see them beating Gonzaga and getting to that next round of the tournament.
I'm with you. And they are a 5.5 point favorite. And we just talk about the big boy. I mean, I watched that game. You give him the ball, I'll say it, he's unstoppable. I mean, you have to double team him or else he's going to get fouled or score. And he's a really good passer. Shot blocker, rim protector, obviously, I mean, his credentials are there. When you have a guy like that, he's a game changer. And so as long as the rest of the guys on Purdue do what they're supposed to do, I don't see Gonzaga being able to beat them.
Yeah. So next one we got Creighton versus Tennessee. This may be the closest game of them all to me personally. I watched Tennessee most of the year. I watched Creighton. They're kind of leading up to the tournament. Creighton shoots it well. Tennessee plays defense well. I think the defense is probably going to trump shooting. And then Tennessee last game, I want to say they shot like 3 for 100. Whatever they shot, it was real bad. They shot in a team from the three-point line, but they still won. And that just shows me that, like, if they don't shoot well, they can still compete. I don't imagine them going 3 for 20-something next game. So I see them slowing down Creighton on defense, taking away some of them threes, making some threes of their own and just kind of playing the Tennessee style of basketball, defense wearing you down and being consistent at the end. So I see Tennessee getting this game.
Yeah, and Creighton barely snuck by the last round. When was that game? Saturday night? Was it an overtime game, I think? They won a game in overtime. It was a very close game. I haven't watched nearly as much Tennessee as you have. You're right there in Knoxville.
Yeah, I'm right down the street. The and they got a National Player of the Year candidate in Kinnick.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's a beast. So, yeah, it's a Tennessee's favored by 2.5 right now. I'm with you. I think they'll sneak by. I think Creighton might be done.
The line on that, I give Tennessee probably like 3 points. I think it's going to be like a 3-point game. Tennessee get it.
There you go.
So
you're right on the net. 2.5.
Okay. So that right there puts Purdue and Tennessee in the Elite Eight battling for a spot in the Final Four. And I give the edge to Purdue. I give the edge to Edie and his size, and Purdue got better shooting this year. I give the edge to them, but I see Tennessee getting past that Sweet 16 round. So,
yeah, it's hard to bet against Purdue. It's hard to bet against Purdue after how they've been playing. So, this could be their moment. This could be their year. This could be their year.
So with that being said, that's the Sweet 16 recap. That's the information I think I need to go out for all the bettors out there who's trying to get a quick little insight on what's going on.
Not gambling advice, not financial advice. Probably shouldn't tell us. Definitely don't tell me.
definitely. All right. So moving on a little bit, we got to make this segment a little bit quick. I just want to go over some quick prospects from the first two rounds that I think probably definitely boosted their draft stock. In no particular order, and there's some kids that probably aren't on here that are probably going to be some lottery picks, like the kid from Tennessee who's not on this list. But Oregon, Kuznar from Oregon, he should be on people's draft boards. The way he played, the way he's able to make tough shots, get to the lane, make threes, the poise he played with, I think he boosted his draft stock. And also the center from Oregon, Farley, he's so efficient. I think he should be a player who gets looked at, but he did have a knee injury, which sometimes NBA executives kind of are wary about taking bigs who got knee problems. But I thought he played real well past couple games. Another kid, San Diego State got a kid named Jaden Ladie. He's a monster. Mm-hmm. He's physically strong. He runs the floor well, crazy athletic. He's like the kid from Indiana that played for Golden State right now. He's like that type of kid to me. I think he'll make a good late round draft pick. I think the Illinois guard, Shannon Jr., I mean, he's a big guard. I want to say he's, maybe if I'm not mistaken, he may be 6'7". But he's a big guard. I think that he definitely improved his draft stock. If he wasn't on the board, he should be on there now. And a kid from Oakland, not the Jack Golby kid. I think he'll get there. Like maybe Miami will sign him or something. But I think the big kid that was player of the year, Townsend. Hold on, let me see. Trey Townshend. He is efficient on the block. Yeah. He's efficient on the block. Knows how to play against a double team. Knows how to play on the perimeter a little bit too. Really good size, really good touch. A really seasoned player. I think that would be a good pickup for an NBA team in that late round, maybe in the second round. Colorado's got a guy that's supposed to be a lottery pick. I think his name was Cody Williams. I watched him. I ain't gonna lie, I wasn't really impressed with Cody Williams. And not because he don't have the skills and the tools. he just doesn't have the feel for the game yet. He's a freshman, though. In the last mock draft I look at, I think he was, like, in the top 10 or so. I don't think he's ready. But I do think that Tristan DeSilva from Colorado, 6'7", or maybe even 6'9", wing, forward. The way he plays, he's very efficient, can make threes, can play inside, can guard. A really good prospect. I think he may get some looks. Kid from Grand Canyon University. And here's the thing with him, Grant Foster, 6'7", guard. He had 29 the first game against Alabama. Alabama? Yeah. And no, I'm sorry. 22 the first game against SMC, St. Mary's. And then he had 29 against Alabama. He's an NBA guard, but he had two heart problems and he collapsed twice. I'm not sure how a GM would look at that as far as putting a lot of money into a kid that they can't really count on being available based on heart issues. But he's definitely an NBA level talent. And then lastly, I would say on my list for right now is Mark Sears from Alabama. I mean, the way he's been playing, he gives me Jalen Brunson vibes a little bit, and not as like 2 feet pivot. Yeah. Not as 2 feet pivot wise, but just the way he played, the way he uses body, how smart he is. Hopefully the NBA can see that and give him an opportunity. And lastly,
I actually said that to my wife when I was watching Sears last night. I said it to my wife. I said, "This guy's like a Jalen Brunson. He plays like Jalen Brunson." Yeah. I think that's a great comparison. Great comparison for him. Lefty knows how to use his body and get stuff done.
And lastly, I think that based on the way the bigs have been playing in the tournament in the college this year, I think that they should look at the traditional big once again. And I think that DJ Burns, I think that his GMs and his coaches in the NBA who's watching him and saying, how can you help my team? And when I think of him, I think of, you know, in baseball, they got like the closers. They got the people that may not play the whole game, but you put them in for like 5 minutes here and they do their job and get out. To me, like DJ Burns, it could be a guy in the NBA that comes in 4 or 5 minutes at a time and just kind of like you run through him a little bit and then he come out and he come back in. Maybe he play 10, 15, 20 minutes, but I can see him helping the NBA team. And I think that maybe he'll get a shot. Maybe he'll get a shot.
He's putting himself in a position. Everybody's going to know who he is. Doesn't he kind of remind you a little bit of Z-Bo?
Oh, he's definitely. I mean, that's been stuff that me and him talked about in person, like the Z-Bo game. I mean, it's been times I watched Z-Bo film, and we worked on stuff that he did because on top of that, Z-Bo's left-handed as well.
Yeah.
They got the same – I think he said a quote one day. He said, when I was young, I used to watch Hakeem Olajuwon, but as I grew older, God blessed me with the Zach Randolph build. So he had to take it and run with it. Besides that, I mean, that was a good talk about the NCAA tournament. Moving forward, I'm excited to see how stuff plays out. I appreciate you being the first guest on the podcast for this special edition March Madness show. So be sure to everybody. I just show Devin Seifert some love, AAU Select Tour, NCAAU, and we'll be sure to have you back on and really unpack all the stuff that you do for the basketball world and all the stuff that we've done together in the past and we'll continue to do in the future. So I appreciate you coming on and talking basketball with me.
Hey, it's been an honor, and I'll be back anytime you tell me. I'll be ready. I just enjoy talking sports with you. Exciting time of year for basketball, so I appreciate you having me on. It's been an honor.
For sure. Well, with that being said, be sure to like, comment, subscribe to the channel if you like what we're doing. And without further ado, be sure that you find time to do the things that means something to you. And we're out of here. Good job.